Welcome to the unofficial House of Wind book club, ran by two best friends and self-declared members of the Night Court.
Today we are discussing chapters 19 and 20 of A Court of Mist and Fury.
I know you can hear me from the dark. I know you're listening from afar. I thought that no one could fix me.
Libby, I need you to talk about what you want to talk about first, because I am very passionate about what I'm going to talk about, and I do not want to ruin or get in the way of your important events of the week, my friend. So please go first.
It's not that important. Do you remember how you had mail mishaps not that long ago?
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm having mail mishaps. We sent out our Christmas cards this last holiday season, the 2023 holiday season. And I always send out my Christmas cards like right after Thanksgiving, like the week following Thanksgiving.
Okay.
That way there's no reason that Christmas cards should not get to whoever they're going to by Christmas.
Right.
Right now, it is February 18th as we are recording this.
Right.
My sister-in-law, a couple days ago, just got our Christmas card in the mail.
That sounds like some Italy stuff.
It's been like almost 3 months. I mean, a little, not quite, almost 3 months. What in the hell? It's like an 8-hour drive from where we live to where they live and some change, probably longer than that. But still, 3 months?
That's a little insane.
My in-laws, my father-in-law and mother-in-law, they live on the same street as them. And they got their Christmas card within 2 weeks of us mailing it. My husband's brother, my brother-in-law, and sister-in-law got their Christmas card just recently, despite living a couple houses down from my father and mother-in-law, who got theirs 2 weeks after we mailed it.
How?
That's what I want to know. They've got to be on the same mail delivery route. They have to have the same mail person.
Literally how?
What happened?
You know what happened? It got lost.
It got lost. It probably did.
Oh my God.
Or I could just totally mess with her and start sending her random Christmas cards throughout the year and be like, still, it just got there.
I want you to send Christmas, like get stock photos.
Stock photos.
And no return address.
And that way she won't know it's for me, but she's just like, exactly. We got all these Christmas cards and we're just now getting them.
Yes.
That's hilarious.
Why would you not? That sounds beautiful.
That would be really funny.
I think that is a beautiful idea, and I very much think you should do it. Well, you know what? We don't send out Christmas cards. Here's why. I don't have my shit together enough for that.
Okay.
Also, I never took photos before this year. I never had a picture besides like my dogs and my husband. Maybe we'll do one.
We didn't start sending them until we had our child.
Okay.
That's why we started sending them.
So maybe I can not do that until I have a child.
We had several years of marriage before we started sending Christmas cards. We were very bah humbug. We didn't even put up decorations or like celebrate at all. We just didn't give a shit.
Can I tell you about my thing?
Look, religious trauma is fucking wild. Yeah, please do.
It is insane. I am very excited to start a new journey that won't be happening until mid to end of March. But okay. You know what? Maybe that's when this is coming out. So maybe you guys will be right on the dot. I will learn to make sourdough if it is the last thing I do.
God bless you. Not me. No.
All I want to do is be able to make bread. But here's my issue, friends. I have tried making like regular yeast bread.
Mm-hmm.
It never works.
Okay.
I don't know how to say it besides it never works. I can never get the yeast to work. It'll never rise. I don't know why I'm trying sourdough, which is like the hardest bread to make. I don't know why I'm skipping to that one, just assuming it's going to work. I don't know if it's because like the last time I did it was the dead of winter and I couldn't proof it in a warm place. I put it by my radiator, but I guess not close enough for it to get warm. I don't know, Libby. I've had so many issues, but I want to make bread. But do you know, in order to make sourdough, you should have a like Dutch oven. Do you know how expensive Dutch ovens are?
Expensive?
It's a fucking pot. It is a pot. That is all it is. And these things are like $150 minimum. And ooh, here's the other fun thing. You can't find them in Italy. They don't exist.
A whole country just doesn't believe in Dutch ovens?
No, none here. Okay. Haven't seen them. So I was so sad because all I want to do is make sourdough. I have friends who make sourdough. You know that sourdough is taking over the world. Also, it is lower on the glycemic index than like regular bread.
Okay.
So for diabetes humans, it won't raise your blood sugar as much. Oh. Like that's kind of the whole point to sourdough, is that it's better for you. I just want to make bread. And I'm very excited that my restrictive diet that I've been on ends in 3.5 days.
Okay.
And so I can make bread. And I found a Dutch oven at the BX.
Really?
So I have a Dutch oven now. I'm excited to make bread. I just can't do it for another couple days. I am determined. I looked up how to like prove the dough.
Yeah.
In my oven because it's too cold to do it anywhere else. Like I just got to put boiling water in there and then like chuck the...
Yeah.
I'm going to learn how to do this if it is the last freaking thing I do. Mm-hmm. Because I can bake and I can cook. Why can't I make bread?
You know, Abby, I've never known you to not start off by doing the hardest thing possible. So this doesn't surprise me.
I did teach myself photography from scratch. And the first thing I did was try to make a lady levitate as my first photo shoot.
Oh,
so,
my God.
You know, starting easy.
The basics.
It's fine. I shouldn't be this excited about freaking bread, but I am. Now that James and I are going to be done with this, again, super restrictive diet that we've been on, which is not great. I'm excited to like dive back into cooking, not just low calorie foods, but like healthy food. Does that make sense?
Right.
I'm just very excited. I'm going to make the bread in my new Dutch oven. That was not $150. It was only $64.
Okay.
I'm very excited, friend. I'm going to make the bread.
I'm excited for you.
I'll tell you if it works. It's probably not going to work. Let's be real. I can't even make regular bread, but...
Well, keep us posted. I want to know how the sourdough journey goes for you.
We're going to make homemade tomato soup.
Ooh.
And grilled cheese croutons.
I'm so jealous right now.
With the sourdough. Oh. And Libby, I could do that all the time if I made bread.
Abby, are you ready for our question of the week?
Yes.
Do you believe in ghosts?
Well, considering your brother haunted me for a good couple of years, the answer is yes.
Hello. Yes.
Friends, you know the Book of Mormon?
Not the Book of Mormon, the musical.
Not the actual Book of Mormon, not like Mormonism, but like the musical, the Book of Mormon.
Right, right.
So Libby came to my house shortly after her brother had passed away, and she was not doing good.
No.
As anybody would be having a rough time. And my old best friend, we shall not speak of, and I were talking about her and her brother after she had left, trying to like commiserate and talk about the situation.
How shitty it all was.
Right. And we were mentioning how along the lines of like, I wonder if he's still with her. And my computer just goes, hello, which is the first part of the Book of Mormon. I had nothing on Spotify. My computer was actually frozen. Like I couldn't use it.
It wasn't being touched. You weren't near it.
No, I was talking to my friend on the other side of my studio at the time. Hello. And then that's all. And it was really creepy. And then things started happening. Like lights would flicker all the time. And like, I don't know, just spooky shit.
Yeah.
Doors would open by themselves. And every time we said the like name Nick, talked about Libby, things like that would happen. So we've always joked. And it followed me from apartment to apartment. So we've always kind of joked that Nick followed me around. But then the other crazy thing is I've had a grandpa who passed away when I was 2. I am a person who has nearly died multiple times. We're talking like an outrageous amount of times, probably over 20. I've come to like the brink of death and then just went, no, and continued with living, even against my own will sometimes. And every single time, I swear to God, my grandpa's been there and I have not known this man. He died when I was 2, but apparently we were best friends when I was 2.
Okay.
And I was talking to a medium who had come over my studio, funny enough, the same exact studio that you were at, but later. And she kind of looks at me and she was a friend of my sister. And she was just coming over to congratulate me on where I was working and my business at the time. And she kind of looks at me and she goes, your grandpa passed away when you were young. And I was like, sure did, buddy.
Yup.
I was like, that's creepy that you know that because we've never talked about it. And she goes, he asked if you could be a little bit more careful driving. And like with life in general, because he's had to save you a couple times and he's getting real tired of it because you're not supposed to go yet.
You're really stressing him out in the afterlife, Abby. You're really making his eternal rest very restless.
Basically, I feel like I have just become a full-time job for him that he didn't sign up for. And I kind of looked at her because... Again, I've almost had cars run into me, like a full semi, and then the last moment they moved. Other things have happened that we don't need to talk about.
Okay.
There's multiple times where I should not be alive. And she's like, yeah, he saved you every single time. So if you could just like chill out a little bit, he'd really appreciate it. And she's laughing this whole time. And I was like, kind of looked at her worried. She's like, oh no, he still loves you. Like, you're good to go. But if you could just like try to stop stressing him out, that'd be fantastic.
She's like, please.
And I'm laughing because I'm like, of course this is happening. I didn't ask her for a reading. I didn't ask her for anything.
Right.
And then the hair on the back of my neck started to stand up. And she goes, oh, he's behind you putting like his hands on your shoulders.
Yeah.
Because I like went to like, you know, move because I thought I had a tickle. But as I went to move, that's when she said that. And I was like,
No.
Okay. So the answer is yes, Libby, even against my will, I do believe in ghosts. What about you?
Oh yeah, no, I believe in ghosts for sure. And I also was just a weird, creepy child for many reasons. When I was about like 2 or 3.
We love that.
My mom's grandpa had passed away when she was in high school and they were super close. And my mom's name is Michelle. And so he called her Mickey growing up. And he was the only one that called her that. That was like his nickname for her was Mickey.
Okay.
And so it was very hard on her, obviously, when he passed. And then
right
when I was about 2, I never met him because he passed long before I was ever born. But when I was about 2, I was playing in my room, I guess, with a toy phone and talking to my phone. My mom was walking by and she's like, oh, who are you talking to? And I was like, oh, Grandpa Charlie. She's like, what?
Wait a damn minute.
And I was like, yeah, it's Grandpa Charlie. And she's just like, do you know who that is? And apparently, like, I went out to the living room and pulled out a photo album that, one, I didn't know existed and would have no idea, you know, at that age or anything about it, opened right to the page and was like, him, that's who I'm talking to. And she was like, what the fuck?
Great. Great.
I was a creepy enough child. My daughter has, more so when she was, like, little, said that she has talked to my brother. And I'm like, okay, that's a thing. She also warned us that we needed to stop coming in her room. She was very terrified of me and my husband coming into her room at night. And this was long before she ever saw Frozen because Olaf under her bed didn't like us. And we're like, we need to move.
Did she go to school at that point or?
I mean, she was in daycare, but she hadn't seen, like, she was too young. She hadn't seen Frozen. She didn't know anything about any of that.
Why have you never told me this? That is terrifying.
I could have sworn I had. It was terrifying. I hated.
No, you did not mention your child thought Olaf was a.
And not the snowman. Like, there was just a man named Olaf under her bed that didn't like us, me and my husband. Super creepy. Yeah.
Specifically you guys.
So there's been weird stuff like that. Right. There's been weird stuff. And I generally do believe that in spirits and ghosts and whatnot. I have kind of a funny story, though. Not necessarily about me believing in ghosts.
Okay.
So my mother-in-law had dated a guy.
Right.
That she had introduced us to named Mickey. Funny enough, his name was Mickey.
So many Mickeys in your family.
Right? No, he's not in my family. He's not around anymore. This guy was not.
Oh.
Not around very long.
This was for a reason, a season, not like a whole life.
It was a very short, not even a full season. Like, it was a very short time.
It's okay.
And Mickey, when we first met him, he was quite the gem. We met up with him after we had gotten married. It was before we were moving from Texas to North Dakota. And we met up with his mom and her boyfriend for kind of like a meet the boyfriend, also kind of goodbye, going, moving away lunch.
Hate that, but.
Right. And we went to Olive Garden. And
oh, so fancy.
Immediately the boyfriend was like, I'm not paying for them. And we were like, we were expecting it. It's totally fine.
Wait, just like that?
He was a gem, Abigail. He was, this is still like my favorite. Oh,
I'm not paying for them. Oh, great. We didn't fucking ask, dude.
We didn't expect you to. That's fine. He was not a great
That's
guy.
That's awkward.
We're trying to like get the conversation going, making things feel less weird. And I'm asking him like, oh, well, what do you do? And he tells me he's a ghost hunter. I was like, oh, okay. Like, cool.
That's why he couldn't pay for dinner. Got it. Got it. Okay.
And I was like, oh, cool. Like, how does that work? I've seen Ghost Adventures. I've seen Ghost Hunters. I've seen it. But that doesn't necessarily mean you ghost hunt in the same way. So I was just curious.
Right.
As meeting for the first time someone who claimed to be a ghost hunter, how that went for them. He was like, well, I technically haven't gotten permission to go ghost hunt in these places that I've gone to. And I'm thinking like, okay. And he's like, so what I do is I get my lawn chair and I sit on...
Y'all, if you could see my face.
The sidewalk or the middle of the road, public property, so they can't legally do anything. And I sit outside these places, whether it's a house or a building or whatever it is. And he just watches it until he sees what he thinks is ghost activity.
Sorry, you asked for his job, correct?
Yes.
Just to clarify... Okay.
Yep.
Well, I hope he made a living out of that.
He's somewhere in the world. He is definitely a scummy person. He was not a great guy.
Did they realize that pretty quick?
My mother-in-law, who she was dating?
Did she realize that pretty quick he was not a keeper? Or did it take a bit?
What would you just qualify as pretty quick?
Oh, a week or so.
Oh, then no.
Mm. So the whole I'm not paying for it didn't really tip her off?
To be fair, I think of my mother-in-law as a hopeless romantic. He was very interesting. I think one of my favorite parts about him too is that he wore these medallions, like unironically, as part of his outfit. And I don't think he realized it, but they were like costume Pirates of the Caribbean jewelry medallion.
Oh, dear Lord Jesus Christ. Oh, it gets better. It just keeps getting better.
I truly believe this man thought that he had like actual like treasure or something. I really 1000% stand by thinking that he did not realize this was probably merch from a movie.
I hope he is happy. That's all I got. That's all I got, friend. I hope he's doing well.
It's more than what I have.
And I hope he's happy. That's all.
To our listeners, I hope that your ghost hunting endeavors work out better.
Yeah, I hope you can ghost hunt pretty well.
I think he has set the bar pretty low for you. You can only go up from there.
Mm-hmm. Well, on that note, my friend, I am never ghost hunting in a lawn chair ever again. You know, my normal Saturday afternoon activities.
I never have. That was not something I've ever done.
All right. The Please Don't Sue Me segment. This podcast episode contains discussions and commentary on the series A Court of Thorns and Roses by Sarah J. Maas. We believe that our use of copyrighted materials falls under the doctrine of fair use, as we are providing transformative commentary, analysis, and discussion for educational and entertainment purposes.
We respect the rights of the copyright owner, and our use is in accordance with the principles of fair use under copyright law. Listeners are encouraged to obtain their own copy of A Court of Thorns and Roses series by Sarah J. Maas to fully enjoy and appreciate the work in its entirety.
Hey, Libby, what's our favorite thing to say?
Please don't sue us.
Yeah. The look on your face was like, I don't know what to say.
It took a minute.
Yes, please don't sue us.
This one's for you, Mickey.
This episode goes out to all the Mickeys.
All the Mickeys out there. This is for you. Chapter 19. Reese teased Moore, Cassian, and Az that they were like dogs, like Amryn had previously accused them of being. Cassian gave him a crude gesture in return. Amryn didn't appear to be there waiting with the rest, and Feyre made a mental note to find her and give her back the necklace she had borrowed, and soon, too. Moore asked how it had went, and Reese called the bone carver a busybody gossip that liked to pry into other people's business. Cassian urged him on, and Reese admitted that the bone carver could also be helpful when he chose. And it was time for the inner circle to start doing what they did best. Feyre warmed her hands by the fire, giving herself a moment to ground herself after what she had just revealed to the bone carver. And from what the bone carver implied, she may be able to do with the book and with the abilities she now possessed. Meanwhile, Reese divulged the information they learned about the cauldron and the temple pillagings. Reese left out all the information that Feyre revealed to the bone carver in exchange for the information he had just provided. Surprisingly, Azriel asked most of the questions while Cassian kept quiet, understanding that Azriel probably knew what information was needed more than he did. When Reese was done, Azriel announced his plans to contact his own sources in the Summer Court for information on where the Book of Breathings could be hidden. He also planned to fly to the human world to find out where their half of the book could be kept before having to resort to asking them for it. But Reese told him there was no need, and that even Az's sources shouldn't be trusted with this information. Only the people in that room, and Amryn, should know what they had just found out. Azriel argued that they could be trusted, but Reese said that they would not be taking any risks with this. The two silently stood staring each other down, and Feyre imagined Reese was assuring Azriel that this was not a reflection on him. Azriel nodded and backed down, the room still quiet. Moore cut in, asking what the plan was now then. Reese picked non-existent lint off his leathers, and Feyre could see the violet eyes turn glacial as he declared that the King of Hybern had committed an act of war by ransacking the temples to retrieve missing pieces of the cauldron. Cassian agreed that the king probably wasn't worried about allying with Reese, since his previous allegiance in the past war hadn't been with him. Reese speculated that Hybern's forces had infiltrated the lands without detection, and Reese now planned to return the favor. Cassian and Moore had feral amusement plastered across their faces at this. Moore asked simply, how? They would have to go to the cauldron, which was in Hybern, either to take it back or to use the book to nullify its powers. This had Feyre trembling from a small place of fear. Azriel advised that they would need to find a way to get through the many wards that Hybern had, and undetected at that. Reese nodded and determined that they would need to start now. They would need to hunt for the book, both halves, and move quickly before word could spread that they had them. Cassian wondered how they would retrieve the book. The items were spelled to the individual High Lords, so only their power could be used to find them, and Feyre was their own personal detector of these objects. Feyre corrected that she was perhaps able to detect these objects, but they didn't know for sure yet. Reese's smirk was enough for her words to fade out. He had no doubt she'd be able to track what they needed, since she had a kernel of each of the seven High Lords' powers. These kernels were like thumbprints. They may not know for certain yet, but there was a way to test it. Before they would go to the summer court, Reese planned on taking Feyre on another little trip just to do that. She would need to find a valuable object of Reese's that had been missing for quite some time now. Feyre asked where, but Azriel answered this time to say, the Weaver. Cassian began to speak, but Reese cut him off to say that Feyre would need to identify an object of his that was in the Weaver's Trove. This would be practice for when they got to the summer court. There, the book could be spelled to look and feel different, and Feyre would need to be able to identify it using Tarquin's, the summer court High Lord, piece of magic. Moore began to snap at Reese for this wild plan, but Feyre pushed further, wanting to know who the Weaver was. Azriel described her to be an ancient and wicked creature that should be left alone. He suggested Reese find another way to test Feyre's abilities. Reese shrugged and looked at Feyre, allowing her to choose. She considered the consequences, waiting to feel any type of fear, but the bone carver and the afternoon itself had taken all of that from her. Feyre teased that they gave such silly names, such as the Bone Carver and the Weaver. Why not just call someone by their given name? Reese asked if they could add one more to the list. Emissary. Emissary to the Night Court for the human realm. There hadn't been one for 500 years now. There also hadn't been a human that had become immortal since then. The human world would need to be prepared, too. The King of Hybern planned to destroy the wall dividing their two worlds and to unleash his terror upon them. The mortal queens in possession of the other half of the book would need to willingly provide it. Feyre may now be immortal, but she still had a human heart. The humans might just be willing to trust them because they could trust her. They would need a neutral territory where the humans felt comfortable meeting them. Feyre suggested using her family's estate. It dawned on Feyre that the spring court bordered the wall they would need to cross. Reese assured her he wouldn't risk discovery from any of the other courts, but also began to try to convince Feyre. But there was no need. She agreed. She pictured Claire Better's body nailed to the wall. Amarantha had simply been one of many commanders under the Hybern King. Feyre would make Nesta and Elaine do this, whether they were happy to or not. Feyre wondered if Reese's power could even work on Nesta, when Tamlin's glamour had failed against her. The plan was set. Once Feyre Darling had returned from the Weaver, they would bring Hybern to its knees. Reese and his inner circle were gone that night. Feyre didn't know where to, and was so tired from the events of the day. After she had eaten dinner, she fell to sleep. The morning after the night of calm yet sickening nightmares, Reese knocked on her door and entered it, slinging a belt hung with knives at the foot of her bed. He told her to hurry because he wanted to be gone before the sun was fully risen. Time was of the essence. And once the King of Hybern realized that someone else was searching for the Book of Breathings, he would have his own agent searching as well. Reese had suspected for long enough now about the book, the cauldron, the king, but had been waiting for Feyre to join him before he could proceed. Had she agreed 2 months ago, they could have gotten a move on everything. Things obviously didn't work out that way, though. Feyre realized that this had been the reason Reese had insisted on her reading lessons. She would need to be able to read the Book of Breathings, or try to translate whatever was inside it. Reese reiterated that had she agreed to work with him, he could have told her all of this months ago. Regardless, she still should have learned to read. Could she blame him if it also served his own purposes to teach her? Well, no, but she wanted to be made aware of any future schemes he had planned. Reese only said, duly noted. Reese pulled out some of Feyre's lacy midnight underthings and acted surprised that she hadn't demanded to be given something else. Feyre swiped it away and remarked that he was drooling on the carpet, before slamming the bathroom door and cutting him off from whatever his next statement might have been. She was warmly dressed with fur-lined leather. She inspected the belt of knives with loops and straps. Reese told her she could not have any swords, bows, or arrows. This piqued her interest. Knives were fine. Reese knelt before her and beckoned for her to stick a leg through a loop of the web of leather and steel. She did this, trying to ignore his hands on her thighs in the process. Reese tightened and buckled her up. The weaver wouldn't notice a knife. She had knives in her cottage already for eating and for working. Things like weapons would be out-of-place objects, and she would notice or sense those. What about Feyre? Reese tightened the straps with his strong hands. He instructed her not to make a sound, and not to touch anything but the objects she was to take for him. Reese looked up to her, hands still bracing her thighs. Feyre now remembered him once ordering Tamlin to bow, and yet here he was, on his own knees before her. His eyes shone as if he remembered the same moment as well. Had that been part of his facade as well? Reese spoke, telling Feyre that if they were right about her powers and the bone carver wasn't lying, then the object would have the same imprint, so to speak, and she would be considered one and the same. She would go unnoticed, practically invisible. The weaver was blind. Her other senses, though, were lethal. Feyre would need to be quick, and she would need to be quiet. She would need to find the object and leave. Reese's hands stayed on Feyre's legs, wrapped around the backs. She asked what would happen if the weaver were to notice her. Although his hands tightened, he jokingly said that they would then learn how skilled she was. Feyre glared at him. Why couldn't he get the object himself if it was so important? He explained that the weaver knew him, and if he were caught, the price would be much steeper, as high lords were not to interfere with her, no matter how dire the situation. She was protected by many laws. She was also protected by her own wrath. Feyre, however, she did not know. She belonged to every court now. Feyre asked him, "So I'm your huntress and thief?" Reese gave her a sly grin as his hands slid down her legs, telling her, "You are my salvation, Feyre."
Chapter 20. He winnowed them into a wood older than any Feyre had seen before. She asked him where they were, but Reese didn't answer right away. Instead, he explained that in the heart of Perinthian, there was a large empty territory that divided the north and the south. At the center was their sacred mountain. He then explained that the forest that they were currently in was at the eastern edge of that territory, that in the place that they currently stood, there was no High Lord. The laws were made from whoever was the strongest, meanest, and most cunning, which so happened to be the Weaver. Feyre questioned why Amarantha had not wiped them out, and Reese countered with the fact that Amarantha wasn't a fool. She didn't dare touch these creatures in the woods. He had even tried to convince her to do so, but she never bought his lies. "And we're disturbing her now for a mere test?" said Feyre. Reese only laughed and noted that Cassian had even tried to convince him to not take Feyre here. Feyre asked why, and Reese didn't know, but he did say that Cassian was probably more interested in fucking her than protecting her. Feyre called Reese a pig, but his next words were a shock. "You could, you know, if you needed to move on in a physical sense. I'm sure Cassian would be more than happy to oblige." Feyre felt like this was yet again another test, and that pissed her off even more. "Tell him to come to my room tonight." Reese reminded her that it would only happen if she survived the test, but Feyre said that Reese sounded so pleased by the idea that she wouldn't. "Quite the opposite, Feyre," he said as he moved closer to her. "I'll let Cassian know you're open to his advances." She told him good, but she felt his power hit her after her response. She was about to jump off the stone when he gripped her chin so quickly she couldn't start to pull back. His words sounded lethal as they left his lips. "Did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you?" Feyre knew he could hear her heartbeat accelerating, so she gave him a hateful smirk and jerked her chin out of his hands. "Isn't that all you males are good for anyway?" she bit back, or tried to. The words came out a little breathless. Reese's smile wasn't one of happiness, but of desire. Feyre knew it was a dangerous line they were tiptoeing on, but she also knew he was doing it to keep her distracted from what was about to come. He knew her crutches. Anger, flirtation, annoyance. Feyre thought that if Reese wanted her to go into the Weaver's mad, she must truly be horrible. Feyre told Reese, "Nice try," but even if it had been to distract her, she was going to tackle him right to the ground. But he held up a hand before stopping in front of a clearing. Before them stood a cottage with a thatched roof and a chimney that was falling to pieces. It seemed normal, almost mortal, but there was no smoke or light coming from inside the house. But Feyre could hear, very quietly, almost humming, coming out of the house. Feyre thought it was the sort of place she would have stopped if she was hungry or thirsty or in need of shelter, but maybe that was the trap. Reese motioned towards the cottage and bowed, letting his flair for dramatic show. Feyre just had to make it in and out without a sound and find whatever stupid object was his. Oh, and then run as fast as her immortal body could. "Good luck," Reese silently mouthed. She flipped him off, or gave him a rude gesture, as Bestie likes to write. She flipped him off before starting towards the front door. The path felt like a pretty trap that her mortal side screamed at. But Feyre was no longer human and no longer prey, no longer a mouse, but a wolf. The voice she heard before her continued to sing. There were two sisters, they went playing, to see their father's ships come sailing. And when they came unto the sea brim, the elder did push the younger in. She had heard this song before, though the human version was a little different. Feyre listened for another voice, but heard nothing but the sounds of a machine and the continued voice of the weaver. Sometimes she sank, and sometimes she swam, till her corpse came to the miller's dam. Feyre tried to calm her breathing as she opened up the front door. There was, thankfully, no squeaky hinges on the door. She looked in to find a large room with a small door shut in the back. There were shelves lining the walls full of every knick-knack you could think of. Books, shells, dolls, herbs, pottery, shoes, crystals, more books, jewels. She was a hoarder, the weaver. Speaking of, she sat before an ancient spinning wheel with her back to Feyre. She had long, dark, black hair and snow-white skin. From where Feyre stood, she looked young, and her honey-drenched voice continued to sing. But what did he do with her breastbone? He made him a vial to play on. What did he do with her finger so small? He made pegs to his vial withal. She saw the weaver weaving white fiber into the wheel. It looked like wool, but Feyre knew deep down it was not. She knew that she didn't want to learn what creature the fiber came from, who it was from. From the thread before her eyes and the swaths of fabric woven from the weaver's loom next to it, Feyre realized she came on spinning day. Panic started to fill her chest, but Feyre reminded herself she was a wolf. She stepped into the cottage as the weaver started the next verse. And what did he do with her nose ridge? Onto his vial he made a bridge. What did he do with her veins so blue? He made strings to his vial there too. Avoiding actually listening to the horrific words coming from the weaver's mouth, Feyre searched for whatever was supposed to pull her attention towards it. She looked over the shelves and the ceiling, but found nothing. She wondered if Rhys had possibly sent her on a fool's errand. Was there actually nothing for her to find? It could have been taken. Was the flirting thing in the woods honestly just a distraction? Feyre realized that maybe she resented Tamlin enough to enjoy that deadly bit of flirtation. And maybe that made her just as much of a monster as the weaver before her. Granted, if she was a monster, that meant Rhys was too, and that made them too much alike, beyond the power he had given her. But then she felt it, almost like a tap on her shoulder. She kept an eye on the weaver while following whatever had pulled her its way. It seemed to greet her, seemed to say, "Hello, have you come to claim me at last?" Feyre wanted to answer it, but the weaver's voice continued. What did he do with her eyes so bright? On his vial he set her at first light. What did he do with her tongue so rough? 'Twas the new till, and it spoke enough. Feyre followed the calling to a shelf where the first row of shelves held nothing. But the third? She swore she could smell his salt and citrus scent, and realized the bone carver was right. The shelf held an old letter knife, books in a leather that Feyre didn't want to touch or smell, a handful of acorns, a tarnished crown, and a ring. The ring was twisted strands of both gold and silver with flecks of pearl and a stone in the most beautiful sapphire. Feyre had never seen a sapphire like that, one she could have sworn reflected the lines of a six-pointed star on its face. Yeah, this screamed Rhys. Had he really sent her for a ring? Then bespake the treble string, "O yonder is my father the king." Feyre watched the weaver for only another second to try to figure out the distance between the shelf and the front door. All she had to do was grab the ring and run. Run quickly. Then bespake the second string, "Oh, yonder sits my mother, the queen." Her hand reached for the knife on her thigh, a knife that she might stab Rhys with when she saw him next. The flashback happened then, blood covering her hand, sliding the dagger through his skin, how the blood would dribble out of him and he'd groan in pain. But she made her thoughts stop, even if she could still feel the blood of the now dead fairies on her hands. Then bespake the strings all three, "Yonder is my sister that drowned me." She took a steadying breath and grabbed the ring. But then the weaver stopped singing. Gosh, dang it again.
You know what we haven't had in a while? A good cliffhanger.
Oh, of course we have. What do you mean? It's every chapter.
I said a good one.
Oh, yeah. It hasn't been a good one. You're right. This was a pretty good one.
Pretty heavy, yeah.
This is the point where I was no longer on pain meds when, you know, I'd started this book. And I remember reading this and going, yeah, I'm not going to bed now.
I'm up. This did it.
I'm going to be up indefinitely at this point.
Well, oops. I thoroughly enjoyed my chapter.
Listen, you didn't have to sing the weaver song.
I know, I got a lot of hands. Rhys hands on Feyre thigh, like, whoo.
No, and you got one of my favorite quotes that you are my salvation, Feyre.
This was my quote of the week. You are my salvation, Feyre. Ugh.
It was good. But I have to say, the start of your chapter was my favorite thing when Rhys was calling the Illyrians basically a pack of dogs.
He's like, "You sure are."
And then when he talked about the bone carver, he was like, "He's just a busybody." who likes to gossip. And I was like, okay, my guy. Just because he didn't say everything.
They're like, cool. Can we get to the point? And he's just pissy that the bone carver was pushing his buttons.
You did, though, have a lot of info dump in your chapter two.
Yeah, we definitely learned quite a bit about the Weaver. She's blind. She's got just a shit ton of stuff. And you gotta be careful that she can't figure out who you are, that you're there, or you're basically never gonna get out.
Oh, so fun.
Super great. Super great. I think that there was a lot of heated, spicy moments. Build up. I should say build up to what could have been spicy moments between Feyre and Rhys. I think there was a lot of tension going on as he was helping her step into her leather straps.
Listen, the man who doesn't kneel.
Oh.
Suddenly kneeling.
She's thinking back to when he told Tamlin to bow. I was like, oh, man.
That is still one of my favorite parts of the book, though.
It really is.
The purple highlighter, I don't think, came out, friend.
It sure did.
Not for me. I didn't even highlight anything in purple. I think the moment there that made me laugh was when Feyre said, you're drooling on the carpet.
That was good. I was shocked that he's going through her under things. I was like, man, what are you doing, sir?
I just see him being like a snotty little butthead.
Yes.
And just being like, this? You didn't ask for anything different but this? And she's like, come on.
Your chapter, I felt Rhys seemed to be getting almost jealous of the idea.
Cassian?
Of Feyre pursuing things with Cassian. And she wasn't turning it down. I felt like Feyre was trying to kind of like play this teasing game. And I felt like Rhysand was a little more serious than Feyre was. I think he was...
Listen, Rhys brought it up.
I think he was trying to test the waters to see if she'd be like, I don't want Cassian, I want you. And she didn't do that. She was just like, send him to my room. And I think he wasn't expecting her to just go along with that. Like, yeah, go ahead. Go right on up.
She doesn't say like, what did Cassian think about? Like, nothing.
Right.
He brings it up. And she's like, Cassian even tried to convince me not to take you with me. I thought he might even punch me. And she's like, why? And then she says, I barely knew him.
Right.
That's her thought. And he's like, well, because he's more interested in not saving you, but fucking you. And she's like, okay, bring it on, dude.
Yeah.
Like, I know this makes you, you're the one that's bringing this up. You have a problem with this.
This is bothering you.
My purple highlighter did come out, though. When she said, same page, 215. A bit of hollowed air pushed against me like a flicker of night. That power along my bones and blood stirred in answer. I made to jump off the stone, but he grabbed my chin the moment too fast to detect. His words were a lethal caress as he said, did you enjoy the sight of me kneeling before you?
Whew.
I was like, okay, dommy mommy shit, let's go.
That to me was like a straight up sign of him trying to get reassurance that she enjoyed potential tension with him.
Yeah.
That she was enjoying the possible flirtation they had going. And he was like, well, what about me? Did you enjoy seeing me that way? And it was like, okay, Rhys, calm down.
And I love how she tried so hard not to get turned on, but she's like, fuck, he can hear my heartbeat. Like,
yeah.
So she just gives him like a smart ass smile instead. I was like, girl. And then she said, isn't that all you males are good for? And I was like, And then she's like, I know why he's doing this. Of course, he was just trying to distract her, which we know. But like the fact that he distracted her that way instead of just like blatantly annoying her.
I'd like to think there was a little bit of truth to it though too, okay?
Maybe. Also, he sent her in to die for a fucking ring.
Yeah, bro, what the fuck?
A ring. Sapphire is my birthstone. So I was like,
Mine too.
I bet you it's beautiful. Oh, really? And then I was like, duh, we have basically the same birthday.
Duh.
A ring? Oh. Really? You're risking that person's life for a ring?
That was dumb. Pretty frustrating.
And then the fact that the Weaver is a hoarder. So in this room full of shit, Feyre has to find a literal...
needle in a haystack?
A needle in a haystack.
Yeah.
That's what she's doing. And she finds it. Of course she does.
Yep.
He knew she would.
The Weaver gave me more heebie-jeebies than the Bone Carver did. She freaked me out more. She felt like more of a threat.
Really?
Yeah.
I think she's more of a monster. The Bone Carver gives me like... down to the core, like fear.
I guess I feel more like she is an immediate threat than I
yes,
do with
okay.
Bone Carver. Like, I don't feel like when you're in the Bone Carver presence, you're necessarily going to be killed right then and there on the spot. You don't have to be on guard necessarily in the same way. But the Weaver feels like imminent danger.
Her being blind, does that at all calm your fears of like not getting caught?
No, because they even said her other stencils.
Her other stencils.
Her other senses are more lethal. Other stencils.
Yes, but, and this is not me saying like, if you're blind, you obviously, okay, you know what I mean. But like, I feel like that's at least and up? Because here's my question. If she couldn't see you and she starts to come after you, couldn't you just like stab her?
Look, Reese didn't even want to go in there. All right. Other High Lords were terrified of her.
Reese can't go in there.
But they're all terrified of her wrath. It's not just laws that protect her. They even said it's her wrath.
I'm with Pharaoh. Why the hell is she going in for a random object that he won't tell her about? There has to be another test. Like, you know what? This could be a test. What about if you put something of yours in another room, just in the house, and said, hey, Pharaoh, can you go find that? That would be a good test. Why are you taking her to the freaking Weaver in the middle of no man's land and gonna let her die?
I don't know. I didn't write it. Okay.
For a ring. Bestie, this is not your best. Our star of the week this week is The Mysterious Bookcase, which is very mysterious. I'm absolutely obsessed with them. They are a, who would have thought it, another shop that we absolutely love. They are on Etsy worldwide. And I love that they make blind dates with a book, which is just the cutest thing ever. They've got book trilogies, they've got book marks, they've got everything bookish related. Actually, they also made an audio for us this week, so I'm going to go ahead and let them talk to you.
Hi, everyone. I'm Allie from The Mysterious Bookcase. Thank you so much, Abby and Libby, for having me on the podcast. I have never done anything like this before, and I am just so very, very excited to be here. I'm a Canadian, but I've lived in the UK for about 10 years now with my partner, Matt. I have loved books for as long as I can remember, and I have both of my parents to thank for that. They always had a book in hand and encouraged me to read. Some of my favorite memories growing up are of my mom and I curled up in bed reading books like Inkheart by Cornelia Funke, and of course, the Harry Potter series. So nowadays, my favorite genre is still fantasy. My love for books and stories has followed me all over the world, and it's rare to see me without a book in hand or at least one stuffed into my purse. The Mysterious Bookcase is a small business based in the UK, and we specialize in a blind date with a book package for readers. We started in October 2022, and it's run by myself and my partner, Matt, although sometimes our cat, Harry, named after Harry Potter, of course, likes to supervise, but let's be honest, Harry mostly sleeps on the job. If you've never heard of a blind date with a book before, it's a concept that stops a reader from judging a book by its cover because the book is wrapped up. When ordering with us, we allow the reader to choose the genre, and then we pick a surprise book from our library and beautifully wrap and decorate it before sending it off for you to enjoy. We wanted to create a cozy gift for all book lovers and thought the addition of tea and chocolate and a bookmark made the package complete. We hope to introduce readers to new authors, new titles, new aspects of a genre they already know and love, or perhaps a new genre altogether. The Mysterious Bookcase was created out of my love for reading, and particularly my obsession with secondhand books, as well as Matt's interest in the mystery aspect around this bookish gift. Matt and I have been together for 10 years and work incredibly well together, and I really couldn't imagine doing this with anyone else. We are based in the UK on the south coast of England, but we do ship our book packages all over the world. You can even hang out with us on Sunday on a TikTok live stream and watch us wrap orders as they come in. I am incredibly proud of our business. We had just no idea what it would become when we created The Mysterious Bookcase. When we started it in October 2022, it was just a little hobby, and it very quickly grew into a full-time job for us both. We've grown to sell not only books, but I hand make book sleeves, and we now have our own book club, which is incredible, and I love it so much. But the most unexpected accomplishment of TMB has been the community we built around our business. These are people who come back and order again and again, recommend us to their family and friends, and hang out with us on live streams and in our Discord server. TMB is a community now as much as it is a business, and it's a safe space for all readers to come and chat about books. It makes us incredibly proud to watch it grow, and it continues to amaze us all the time. One of the best books I have ever read. What is my favorite book? I read The Bell Jar by Sylvia Plath in high school, and it's a book that I still think about now to this day. It is incredibly powerful and emotional, and at times a difficult read because you end up feeling so much for the main character. It's one that I come back to again and again, and I always like to recommend to people. So I would definitely say that it is one of the favorite books I've ever read. The best series that I've ever read? Well, the Harry Potter series will always have a special place in my heart as it was a childhood favorite. But I do have a new series that I'm absolutely in love with, and that is the Letters of Enchantment duology, also known as Divine Rivals and Ruthless Vows by Rebecca Ross. The author has this beautiful way of writing her characters and shaping her world, and this effortless way of incorporating magic into it. It is a romantic duology that is a must read. And it's just one of my favorites. I'm currently reading Crescent City for the first time. I'm only about 200 pages into the first book. I wasn't able to get to them before the release of the most recent book in the series, but I'm slowly making my way through it. I'm finding it different to ACOTAR and Throne of Glass, but I am enjoying it. So looking forward to finishing that and reading the next books with everyone. If I got to visit one place in the ACOTAR world, where would it be and why? Oh, I would absolutely love to visit Valaris. Just to have the experience of walking around the city, seeing the people, and of course, hopefully bumping into anyone from the Night Court would be incredible. Absolutely incredible. My favorite Sarah J. Maas book is A Court of Mist and Fury. I remember reading that book over 2 days and I was so hooked on the world, the characters, and the story at that point. It was so hard to put down and it remains my favorite to this day. And just for fun, this is perhaps an unpopular SJM opinion, but I don't think that Empire of Storms and Tower of Dawn from the Throne of Glass series should be read as a tandem and are more impactful if read on their own. This is something that I'm actually incredibly passionate about and I recommend people to read them on their own. You can find The Mysterious Bookcase on TikTok and Instagram, and you can order from our Etsy store if you do live outside of the UK. We love to see the photos and videos you tag us in when receiving one of our Blind Date with a Book packages, and we hope that you'll join our little bookish community. Thank you again, Abby and Libby, for having me. This was such an incredible opportunity. Bye for now, everyone.
If you guys want to follow them, they are at The Mysterious Bookcase on Instagram, and I will link their Etsy shop as well.
Calling all dreamers. We want to hear from you. Send us an email to acourtofthornsandpodcasts@gmail.com. Tell us everything. Do you believe in ghosts? We want to know. Did your mother-in-law also date weird guys named Mickey? Do you have anyone in your family named Mickey? Send us all your Mickey-named stories. We can't wait to hear.
Oh, Mickey.
Also, if you would like to, go ahead and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or a rating on Spotify. We would greatly appreciate it. To the people who listen and the dreams that are answered.
We'll see you next week. And remember, don't let the hard days win.
You can hear me from the dark. Listening from a boy makes me taking all my feelings, you in my head, you in my heart. I'm never your dog.
What did I do?
No, it wasn't you. I'm so sorry. That's why I feel so bad. You said just what? Like the Lord's wife, and it just made me, like, biblically, it sounded like the
Lord's wife. In the sign of the cross.
And the Lord's wife said, like, it just, I don't know why, like, my, when you said it, like, my brain was like, whoa, what? Jesus?
I never looked that good in high school or middle school, even now.
I've never looked that good ever.